It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break.
But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to talk with Jean Tang. She is the visionary founder of MarketSmiths, also a TEDx speaker, and we're going to look at how can you create the systems and keep the quality. So even if you pull yourself out of the equation or pull yourself back from being so deeply involved, you can trust that your business is running on the same quality control and level of quality that you did when you were doing everything. There's only so much you can do, and for many business owners, I felt this way, maybe you have too, they seem to feel that they can take on more. So if more things end up on their plate, well, I'm going to move things around. Maybe I'll try to be more efficient. I'll be better in this process. I'll be more productive. And then I can squeeze more in and therefore do more and therefore earn more. And it reminds me of the story of a frog, that if you throw a frog into boiling water, like if you threw us, any of us, into boiling water, we're going to jump out immediately. Oh my God, it's boiling water. But if you put a frog in cool water and gradually turn up the heat, the frog doesn't notice, and it ends up boiling to death, which is really gruesome, and I hope that animal activists don't get all over me for this. But it's a metaphor that also affects us as business owners. How often do we not recognize that the heat's been turned up to the point where we're practically boiling to death, where there's so much that we have to take care of, but because it has happened gradually, it wasn't boom, an immediate thing, we're almost blind to the perils. And that's one of the things we touch on in our 10 Steps to $1 Million Business Report, that importance of having a team to delegate to. Because if everything is all about you, then there is no room. You're going to reach that boiling point, and there'll be no capacity for more. That's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to talking with our guest this week. As I mentioned, Jean Tang is the visionary founder of MarketSmiths, and she leads her growing team to captivate, inspire, and motivate readers. Her mantra, or one of them, is copywriting for humans. How can we make sure that what we're writing is bite-sized, seductive, and jargon-free? As a lawyer, I could probably learn something from that. Jean has declared war against bland, which was her highly viewed TEDx talk. She's helped thousands of clients generate revenue from words and transform the writing of hundreds of seminar attendees. In addition to writing for publications like the New York Times and New York Magazine, Jean is a law school graduate, woohoo, and she's a piano prodigy. So an interesting mix of influences for Jean. But in her off hours, she relishes Brooklyn eateries, takes hikes near the scenic Hudson, New York with her boyfriend, and executes challenging yoga. And we're delighted to have her here on Business Breakthrough. Hey, Jean, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
You have a very unusual approach in your business. But before I get into some of the ways that you've worked with your dispersed team, I wanted to hear a little more about the big vision that you have and how some ways getting bogged down in the weeds was keeping you from that, because you have that brilliant TEDx talk. So I wanted you to talk a little more about that and how that's a vision for your business.
Oh, thanks, Nina. So yeah, the TEDx was one of the highlights of my life. It was so much fun to do that. And I'd love to get on the main stage at some point. In terms of my vision for both my company and what we're trying to do out in the bigger world, I would say, you know, I mean, we're really we feel like what we're doing is something that has been a need as long as there have been flyers or ads or websites. I mean, websites is not that long, but, you know, advertising is a pretty old business. And copywriters are something that people have needed to put out their ads for a while. I do think that our approach is very, very special. I love the approach. I think it universally applies to so many areas, so many formats. I can't tell you the number of times that I say to a prospect or a client, like, here's a way to do it that will really get your audience's attention and their eyes go wide, or they, you know, express something in the nature of surprise. And I think that the way that I think about this, although it doesn't seem like it should be a novel thing, is different and a game changer. And so I have a vision that our company will be known for the kinds of writing that we do. I have a vision that we're going to be able to help both the largest, most influential companies, as well as like a whole host, thousands upon thousands of startups, and the middle market companies in between, and that we can help them market better with fewer words, more powerfully, and really get what they're doing out into the world.
You've called it copywriting for humans, which sums it up brilliantly and really succinctly, which is wonderful. And can you talk a little bit about your business and how that was starting to evolve in a way that kind of got you stuck and in the weeds and maybe not able to always access the vision and the creativity to move it forward in that direction?
The art of growing your business is really quite an art. And I would say that although it felt wonderful, the first full, I would say, 2.5 years of my business were essentially me doing the writing and then me occasionally sort of, you know, getting a freelancer contract writer into a project, maybe working side by side with them or overseeing their stuff, which is very much the way the business model has gone. That was sort of the way it worked. But in terms of the writing, you know, it was me doing, say, 90% of it and then having other writers do 10%. This is something that has been completely flipped on its head because, you know, realizing that, okay, I can only do a certain amount of work myself. The business model was always to leverage other writers and to have us be a writing team available for clients, which is when, you know, for me, it was sort of a matter of getting stock of what was our approach and how do I sell this, you know, this abstract thing that is subjective, you know, in terms of quality, you know, what kind of clients are our sweet spot? And, you know, all those things are sort of natural in the course of doing business anyway. So I don't regret any of that time. I don't think I really started acting like the business that we are until I started hiring writers.
Was there a particular event or situation that led you to say, okay, now we really need to step forward and hire some more people because this is enough?
You know, I have friends who know this, that I was very torn about the whole thing for a while. I mean, I had always said, this is my business vision, this is our model, was to utilize other writers. I mean, I wasn't going to be the writer forever. I wasn't entirely sure how to do it. I, for the first, you know, year or two, I said, I'm never going to have staffers. Then I met writers that were wonderful and really wanted to get hired. They wanted to get hired. They wanted to be doing this all day long and for us. And, you know, and that was really kind of the turning point, was really more of a supply and demand thing with the, you know, the supply saying, please, you know, let us work with you full time. And I said, okay, I guess that's our business model now. And I've never looked back. Very, very happy with how that's gone.
And what has shifted in your mindset or approach as a result of now stepping into being more of a business leader instead of the primary workhorse, for lack of a better word?
Yeah. Good question. The so much has shifted. We always have a, you know, just to back up a little bit into like how we work with clients. We always tell clients there's always going to be a content strategist. You will have not only a lead writer on your project, and if your project's big enough, you'll have you know, other writers, like writers on the team. So it might be like up to 10 or 12. But you'll also have a lead strategist. And what that strategist is responsible for doing is typically actually not coming up with the, like, okay, you need, you know, 10 emails and then you need a website. And then you need marketing collateral, you know, brochures and things like that. It's not like that. That's more marketing consultant, marketing strategist role, digital strategist. What we do on the strategy side is that person oversees the copy that gets written and makes sure that it hits on all the things that we know to do to make sure that that copy both works for the intended purpose and is aligned with the actual company that we're writing for. So it's aligned with the brand of our client. The more that I do that, the less that I'm sort of holding some of the more particulars of our clients. But even though I, as acting as content strategist, will be there during our initial discovery process with the client, I'm not necessarily... I understand how their business works, but I'm kind of sticking to the big picture. Our writers are the ones who are sort of like aware of, oh, this is like the details of this particular package that they're marketing and positioning. These are the particular people that we're writing bios for, and they've got 12 team members. I'm not necessarily keeping those details in my head anymore. So we've got a fair number of projects going on at any given time. I think we're now running something like 50 projects. It's probably a bit of a record for us, and it's summertime, so I don't know what's going on, but it's wonderful. So those sort of things. And then also as we grow and as we continue to invest in our staff members and they continue to work on their writing and do wonderful, wonderful work, they're able to step into the role of content strategist as well. So we also have these wonderful projects where, I'll sell the project. Then our staff members will act as content strategists. They know exactly what to do. They're excellent at it. They're often overseeing writers who may have more years of experience, but not as intensely as they have. And I'm so, so proud.
Wonderful. And you brought up several things that really intrigued me. The first is, now that you've been able to step back as the more of a strategist instead of the hands-on primary writer, what has that freed you up? I'm just trying to get a sense of your time and the benefits that you've gotten from not working this business 24/7.
Yeah, it's a great question again. It is sheer growth. It is growth. And it means that I'm able to step back. I'm able to spend my days selling and doing account management, which are my primary responsibilities for now. I'm able to do things like hire a lead generator, which we recently did, and then work with him to get him fully trained, fully on board. We're able to, have more clients than we ever did, and stay on top of them and know what's going on in their business cycle. So we kind of know where opportunities lie and where they may need help and where they may, want guidance or just like a sounding board. All of that stuff. I'm able to spend more time on training. And then I will say, from a personal perspective, there have been times over the past, few years, 4 years, that I felt like, good Lord, I'm sure this is like a story so many business owners can relate to, but like, oh, I pulled another 13-hour day. Oh, it's midnight and I've been working since 7 a.m. so what I'm doing nowadays is building in space. And what that means is, no working on the weekends. Of course, my boyfriend would probably disagree with that, but, I need to check the occasional email or sit down and do something for 5 minutes. But in general, no working on the weekends. It means, leaving early Friday morning. It means going to yoga during the week so I can feel somewhat physically balanced.
Mm.
All kinds of stuff like that are really important for well-being. And it means also, I wouldn't say no more 12 or 13 or 15-hour days, but it does mean that the number has reduced substantially.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And used an interesting word. You were talking about investing in staff writers more focus on training. What does that mean to you, to be investing in your team?
That's a great question. The idea that your team is performing, this job day in, day out, they're I mean, that's an investment on their part. They're giving their all in terms of effort, in terms of learning new things, new skills, being better and better at their job all the time. And from my standpoint, this is why I love having employees, but, you know, it really is, it's an investment in terms of training. I mean, that's probably the most crucial one. But, if I see a contract writer doing something, of course, it's to our benefit if we point it out and say, hey, this is sort of how we like to do our writing. But with a staff writer, I will actually have that writer put it on a training agenda. So we have these rolling agendas. And, we'll then go somewhere and, take a half hour, like once every other week, and we'll talk about, where that fits, whether that technique is a good one or if something needs to be tweaked. I'll explain why I've made certain changes in copy. So we'll do some training. So that's a major investment. I mean, there are other ways as well. But I'm always like giving little bites of wisdom. And when you have a writer that is young but is intensely writing, the growth curve is like so exciting. we've got people in their 20s and they're writing about, very, very sophisticated topics. And they haven't necessarily had that experience out in the business world. Whereas I have, so I can also train on some of those points as well.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And as you were growing, if you're not ready to buy that one-way ticket to Tahiti and tell everybody to go take a long walk off a short pier, there's so much that feels like it's not working that they don't even know where to start. Where did you start in terms of getting things off your plate? And how did you choose where to start?
Uh-huh. I had a wonderful mentor 3 years ago, actually it was probably more like, well, 2 or 3 years ago, who told me that it was always his focus on being a zero in his business. And so, and this guy's a lawyer, Corey Kupfer, great, great lawyer. And he, I showed up at my first session. We had these formal sessions with other business owners as well. And, and I was sort of like, well, I'm really important. I need to do all these things. These are things I need to do. I need to do them personally. And he was like, he called BS on me and said, you really don't. There's nothing in the world that you are doing that you can't teach someone else to do, even if they're only doing it 80% as well as you are. And I think that is, a great business principle. Ideally, you'd want them to be doing it at 95%, but, So first, he planted that idea in my head, and then I sort of saw how he was doing it himself. The concept of a zero is that you yourself have no impact on the day-to-day. The day-to-day does not require your presence. I think that there's struggles on all fronts to do this at every level, every size of corporation, but, it's an ideal, right? So I aspire to, if right now I am the key salesperson, I'm the operational person, I'm doing content strategy, and I'm also account manager, right? So I've got to just fire myself on all these fronts. So it's a matter of just figuring out, okay, what's the next role that we could potentially bring in, or who can I delegate this role to? Who has the time to do it? Who has the wherewithal and the natural talent, skill set, and all that good stuff, and then just kind of get them in there. So, yeah, I think I'm very, very much a long way away from that now, but I'm much, much closer than I had been, last year this time.
And it's always a process. So, it's a never-ending iteration. Jean, you talked on something that I think scares some business owners, which is, I'm going to invest a lot of time training someone. And as you say, they might do it at 80%, but there's a sense mm-hmm. of, particularly for creative services, quality control. How do you maintain quality control within your business, especially when with your model, while you have employees, I believe you've also worked with a dispersed team of freelancers.
We work with about 15 freelancers across the country, and then we have our staff members. We actually here have a quality control process that that has 35 points. As with anything, it's great to commit it all to writing, you know, give metrics around it so that you can, you know, build a process so you can actually make sure that it's something that's happening and not just sort of tangibly in your head. But yeah, we created a 35-point quality control process. And I'll say that, you know, when people think about quality control around writing, they're generally thinking about things like grammar errors and typos and spelling and punctuation. We go far beyond that. That's definitely part of our process. It's one step, but the rest of it has things like, are we confirming engagement? Is there an engagement that's happening here between the reader and these words? All of our steps can be treated as a process so that somebody could look at a document 35 times to make sure each time that each of the steps is in there. Hmm. Engagement was an example. Another one would be brand alignment. Another one would be that we're not repeating words a million times in the same paragraph or on the same page. So those are just a few examples of some of the items that we have. Each step makes the copy way more strategic. You know, we're very clear at the end of the day, what this needs to do is essentially capture the reader's attention, hold on to that, while building credibility, creating some sort of urgency, and then pointing to a clear call to action. You know, when you have those five steps, that, you know, there are certain ways to sort of build in those five steps. We've got a ton of tools at our disposal, but the quality control process is really crucial to make sure that everything is happening.
Interesting. Yeah. And I know in many industries, you know, we both share having a legal background, there's almost an intuitive sense of quality control because, wow, if you make a mistake, then you can be sued for malpractice. Actually coming up with metrics around quality control, how did that come up in your experience?
What do you mean by that?
Where did the idea of quality control come in that you would actually start to document things that we want to make sure we check in each of the pieces that goes out under our name?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to say it was a part of a grand plan that I had. But as with so many things in business, it happened very organically. It sort of happened when, agencies, web agencies and digital agencies are very concerned about quality control. That's kind of, they've usually got some sort of process built in. Maybe it's built in around the site development to make sure there are no glitches, few bugs, you know, things like that when you launch a site. I think what happened was literally I had an agency project manager ask me what kind of quality control we had in our process. And I said, and I started to explore what we actually, you know, like what I naturally did. And I said, okay, there's this, and then there's this, and there's this. And these are things I was sort of subliminally doing, but very actively doing. And I came up with this list, and initially it was 25, and then I started to discover other things, and I'm like, I've got to add this, and I literally created a list of 35 things. So yeah, that's how it happened. I can't really take a lot of credit for anything but recognizing it when the time came.
Well, and that's one of the great entrepreneurial talents is to be able to say, oh, look, there's a best practice in a different industry, or we're learning something from our clients. How might we bring that back into our business so that we can do things better and also give our clients a greater comfort level based on the things that they're used to seeing? So one last question for you, just to go back to, as you say, your mentor's point about being a zero, which is sort of counterintuitive, but being a zero in your business, what do you see as your next steps on the journey to your becoming a zero?
That is such a good question. So
I won't hold you to it. If you change your mind, it's okay.
I know. Okay. That's good. I'm in one of those happy places right now where I sort of feel like I have a good balance, you know, so I'm not the zero, right? But, you know, business development goes smoothly. I'm so delighted always to be able to train writers. I love doing it. You know, content strategy is a pleasure. And I'm not just saying this, but, you know, I'm at a place where I'm not overloaded with it, burning myself out. So I think when I answer that question, I'm being like, oh, I have to give one of those things up. And this is exactly what it was when I was actually doing, you know, 90% of the writing, right? I was like, I have to give it up. I don't want to give it up. I love this. So I think that's part of it. And I think it's a good thing because it means I like my job. But yeah, I don't know. When I think of like, oh, what do I do? Like one of those things, I would have to say probably sales. I don't see myself really stepping out of the picture, but I do know that, you know, people can be trained to do things, upsell, you know, perhaps generate a lead, close something small, you know, expand the scope, that sort of thing that, you know, that I'm not necessarily training people to do now. You know, you see me not wanting to let go, right? So I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to give up sales. but yeah, I think that's probably the next area. Yep.
Okay. And
Take back in a couple months. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And any words of advice for, especially for creative people or people like me who grew up, I don't want to say grew up, who were trained in the technical aspects of doing what we do. Like I was trained in law. To encourage us to step out. I mean, it sounds like you've got a really good grasp of what your business needs as well as how you deliver your actual service. Any words of encouragement for people who are saying, oh, I just want to stay in my comfort zone?
Oh, nothing ever stays the same, right? I mean, I don't know, was it Buddha that said? So not very good at the quotes, but I do think that sometimes you feel like you're staying in your comfort zone, but they're just such little subtle things that are always changing. And it's either changing your attitude or changing your approach or changing your practice or, you know, something like that. And I do feel like, you know, we're naturally going, if we're changing our relationship to the thing that we're doing, let me see if I can try this. Like if we're changing our relationship to the thing that we're doing, but things are often changing, then it's not actually a comfort zone. And, you know, life is about growth and learning and, you know, stepping into new areas anyway. And believe me, I need to push myself when it comes to some things. I'm not sure. Nina, I feel like I'm botching this question. can you edit this part out?
Yeah, I can play with it because I also did not ask it particularly well. It was just something that came to mind knowing that, you know, a lot of creative people are, oh, you know, I just want to do the writing. But for someone like you to say, I have to give up sales, but I really like that. That's unusual, or I don't often hear that from people with a creative or technical background. So that's where I was thinking, looking for encouragement. And you make a really great point that things do change all the time. And I will probably botch the Will Rogers quote, which is something like, if you stay in the same place all the time, ultimately somebody's going to run you over. Because if you're not changing, but your clients are, or technology is, I mean, I would think that the whole approach to content has changed now that we have so many different, first of all, digital platforms, and then within what's going on online. Is it mobile? Are you looking at Facebook or social media? Is it just web? All of these things mean you constantly need to be, as you say, growing and changing and learning. So if you stay in the same place, ultimately, you're going to be going backwards.
I'm not sure this is in the way of answering the question, but I'll actually say that I am like hyper aware that, you know, I've got this message. I essentially delivered in the TEDx talk you referred to. I delivered that in 2012. So it's already been 3 years. And, you know, as I talk to clients, I do see that they're surprised and delighted to hear there's this approach to copywriting that can be extremely strategic for them. So they're actually leveraging these words as a type of strategy, which people don't really think about that way, right? But I also simultaneously see that my message has been absorbed to a certain extent. And I'm not saying that everybody has seen it, but I'm saying that, you know, the message is out there. People are picking up on it. You know, there may have been some copywriter who saw my talk and they're talking that way to their clients as well, or maybe agencies, or maybe they have nothing to do with me, and, you know, and they're, that's their message as well. And, you know, content's becoming more and more important. So a lot of people are thinking about how to do it, and all this stuff is happening. So if I don't evolve that, go a little deeper, you know, apply it to different technological formats, as you pointed out, mobile, that are coming out, I'm going to be like a dinosaur, you know, in like 2 seconds. So, you know, it is constantly evolving the message and constantly evolving my business to sort of deal with new challenges, new things that come up. And I say, you know, I'd be successful if I were actively seeking out what those challenges were, as opposed to kind of sitting back and resting on any kind of laurels that we have. So, yeah. So I think my antenna's out there and kind of just aware of like that being a challenge in general. And then when something comes along, I pick up on it as fast as I can. So I'm not sure that was in the way of answering your question, but it's so much fun.
Yep, it did. So. It did. So Jean, you raised a lot of great points, and I really like the idea of that quality control process, that the importance of thinking that through, because that's part of the secret sauce. Love the phrase being a zero, and remembering that things change all the time. So we as business leaders need to be changing and evolving in our relationship with our business on an ongoing basis. So all great points. And Jean, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks so much. You asked the greatest questions, Nina.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. You know, I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.